Not long after the appearance of the up-to-date Sorcerer, Mr. Boucher retired as editor of F&SF and was succeeded in the post by Robert P. Mills. Mr. Mills proceeded to do me the largest single favor of my writing life since Mr. Campbell had started the discussion that had led to Nightfall. Mr. Mills asked me to write a monthly column on science for F&SF, and I complied at once. Since the November 1958 issue, in which my first column appeared, I have kept right on going month after month, and as I write this, I am about to celebrate my 10th anniversary as monthly columnist for the magazine. Of all the writing I do, fiction, nonfiction, adult, or juvenile, the F&SF articles are by far the most fun, and in them, during Mr. Mills' tenure, I never referred to him as other than the kindly editor. Anyway, over lunch one day, Mr. Mills said he had seen the name Lefkowitz on several different and unrelated occasions that day, which struck him as a curious coincidence. Could I make a story out of it? In my usual offhand manner, I said sure, and gave it a little thought. The result was a story that served as a tribute to Mr. Boucher, too. He was, you see, a devout Catholic. I must say was, for he died in April 1968, to the heartfelt grief of all who knew him. He was so kind a man that he was loved by the very authors he rejected, even while he was rejecting them, and there simply isn't any harsher test of true love than that. And because Mr. Boucher was a sincere Catholic, there was very often a faintly Catholic air about F&SF under his leadership. Always a pleasant and liberal one, though, for that was the kind of man he was. So I thought that as my tribute to Mr. Boucher's editorship, I would try my hand at that kind of flavor myself. I couldn't handle it Catholic fashion, of course, for I am not Catholic. I did it the only way I could manage, and wrote a Jewish story. The only Jewish story it ever occurred to me to write, I think. And I made Mr. Mills' remark about Lefkowitz become unto the fourth generation. First appearance, the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction, April 1959. Copyright 1959 by Mercury Press, Incorporated. Unto the fourth generation. At 10 of noon, Sam Martin hitched his way out of the taxicab, trying as usual to open the door with one hand, hold his briefcase in another, and reach for his wallet with a third. Having only two hands, he found it a difficult job, and again as usual, he thudded his knee against the cab door and found himself still groping uselessly for his wallet when his feet touched pavement. The traffic of Madison Avenue inched past. A red truck slowed its crawl reluctantly, then moved on with a rasp as the light changed. White script on its side informed an unresponsive world that its ownership was that of F. Lukowitz and Sons, wholesale clothiers. Levkowitz, thought Martin, with brief inconsequence, and finally fished out his wallet. He cast an eye on the meter as he clamped his briefcase under his arm. $1.65, make that 20 cents more as a tip, two singles gone, would leave him only one for emergencies, better break a fiver. Okay, he said, take out 185, bud. Thanks, said the cabbie with mechanical insincerity and made the change. Martin crammed three singles into his wallet, put it away, lifted his briefcase and breasted the human currents on the sidewalk to reach the glass doors of the building. Levkovic, he thought sharply and stopped. A passerby glanced off his elbow. Sorry, muttered Martin, and made for the door again. Levkovic? That wasn't what the sign on the truck had said. The name had read Lukowitz. Lukowitz. Why did he think Levkovic? Even with his college German in the near past changing the W's to V's, where did he get the itch from? Levkovic? He shrugged the whole matter away, roughly. Give it a chance, and it would haunt him like a hit parade tinkle. Concentrate on business. He was here for a luncheon appointment with this man, Naylor. He was here to turn a contract into an account and begin at 23, the smooth business rise which, as he planned it, would marry him to Elizabeth in 2 years and make him a paterfamilias in the suburbs in 10. He entered the lobby with grim firmness and headed for the banks of elevators. his eye catching up the white-lettered directory as he passed. It was a silly habit of his to want to catch sweet numbers as he passed, without slowing or, heaven forbid, coming to a full halt. With no break in his progress, he told himself he could maintain the impression of belonging, of knowing his way around, and that was important to a man whose job involved dealing with other human beings. Kulin Etz was what he wanted, and the word amused him, a firm specializing in the production of minor kitchen gadgets, striving manfully for a name that was significant, feminine, and coy all at once. His eyes snagged at the M's and moved upward as he walked. Mandel, Lusk, Lippert Publishing Company, two full floors. Lafkowitz, Kulin Etz. There it was, 1024, 10th floor, okay. And then, after all, he came to a dead halt, turned in reluctant fascination, returned to the directory, and stared at it as though he were an out-of-towner. Lafkowitz? What kind of spelling was that? It was clear enough. Lafkowitz, Henry J. 701, with an A. That was no good. That was useless. Useless? Why useless? He gave his head one violent shake as though to clear it of mist. Damn it, what did he care how it was spelled? He turned away, frowning and angry, and hastened to an elevator door, which closed just before he reached it, leaving him flustered. Another door opened, and he stepped in briskly. He tucked his briefcase under his arm and tried to look bright, alive, junior executive in its finest sense. He had to make an impression on Alex Naylor, with whom, so far, he had communicated only by telephone. If he was going to brood about Lukowitzes and Lafkowitzes... The elevator slid noiselessly to a halt at 7. A youth in shirt sleeves stepped off, balancing what looked like a desk drawer in which were 3 containers of coffee and 3 sandwiches. Then, just as the doors began closing, frosted glass with black lettering loomed before Martin's eyes. It read, 701, Henry J. Lefkowitz, importer, and was pinched off by the inexorable coming together of the elevator doors. Martin leaned forward in excitement. It was his impulse to say, take me back down to 7, but there were others in the car, and after all, he had no reason. Yet there was a tingle of excitement within him. The directory had been wrong. It wasn't A, it was E. Some fool of a non-spelling menial with a packet of small letters to go on the board and only one hind foot to do it with. Lefkowitz. Still not right, though. Again he shook his head twice. Not right for what? The elevator stopped at 10 and Martin got off. Alex Naylor of Kulin Etz turned out to be a bluff, middle-aged man with a shock of white hair, a ruddy complexion, and a broad smile. His palms were dry and rough, and he shook hands with a considerable pressure, putting his left hand on Martin's shoulder in an earnest display of friendliness. He said, "Be with you in 2 minutes. How about eating right here in the building? Excellent restaurant, and they've got a boy who makes a good martini. That sound all right?" "Fine, fine," Martin pumped up enthusiasm from a somehow clogged reservoir. It was nearer 10 minutes than 2, and Martin waited with the usual uneasiness of a man in a strange office. He stared at the upholstery on the chairs and at the little cubbyhole within which a young and bored switchboard operator sat. He gazed at the pictures on the wall and even made a half-hearted attempt to glance through a trade journal on the table next to him. What he did not do was think of Lev... He did not think of it. The restaurant was good, or it would have been good if Martin had been perfectly at ease. Fortunately, he was freed of the necessity of carrying the burden of the conversation. Naylor talked rapidly and loudly, glanced over the menu with a practiced eye, recommended the Eggs Benedict, and commented on the weather and the miserable traffic situation. On occasion, Martin tried to snap out of it, to lose that edge of fuzzed absence of mind, but each time the restlessness would return. Something was wrong. The name was wrong. It stood in the way of what he had to do. With main force, he tried to break through the madness. In sudden verbal clatter, he led the conversation into the subject of wiring. It was reckless of him. There was no proper foundation. The transition was too abrupt. But the lunch had been a good one. The dessert was on its way, and Naylor responded nicely. He admitted dissatisfaction with existing arrangements. Yes, he had been looking into Martin's firm, and actually, it seemed to him that, yes, there was a chance, a good chance, he thought, that... A hand came down on Naylor's shoulder as a man passed behind his chair. "How's the boy, Alex?" Naylor looked up, grin ready-made and flashing. Hey, Lefk, how's business? Can't complain. See you at the... He faded into the distance. Martin wasn't listening. He felt his knees trembling as he half rose. Who was that man? He asked intensely. It sounded more peremptory than he intended. Who, Lefk? Jerry Lefkowitz. You know him? Naylor stared with cool surprise at his lunch companion. No, how do you spell his name?
L-E-F-K-O-V-I-T-Z, I think. Why?
With a V?
An F.
Oh, there's a V in it, too. Most of the good nature had left Naylor's face. Martin drove on. There's a Lefkowitz in the building, with a W. You know, Lefkowitz.
Oh?
Room 701. This is not the same one? Jerry doesn't work in this building. He's got a place across the street. I don't know this other one. This is a big building, you know. I don't keep tabs on everyone in it. What is all this anyway?
Martin shook his head and sat back. He didn't know what all this was anyway, or at least if he did, it was nothing he dared explain. Could he say, I'm being haunted by all manner of Lefkowitzes today?
He said, we were talking about wiring.
Naylor said, yes, well, as I said, I've been considering your company. I've got to talk it over with the production boys, you understand. I'll let you know.
Sure, said Martin, infinitely depressed.
Naylor wouldn't let him know. The whole thing was shot.
And yet, through and beyond his depression, there was still that restlessness.
The hell with Naylor. All Martin wanted was to break this up and get on with it.
Get on with what? But the question was only a whisper. Whatever did the questioning inside him was ebbing away, dying down. The lunch frayed to an ending. If they had greeted each other like long-separated friends, at last reunited, they parted like strangers.
Martin felt only relief.
He left with pulses thudding, threading through the tables, out of the haunted building onto the haunted street.
Haunted?
Madison Avenue at 1:20 p.m., in an early fall afternoon with the sun shining brightly and 10,000 men and women beehiving its long, straight stretch. But Martin felt the haunting. He tucked his briefcase under his arm and headed desperately northward. A last sigh of the normal within him warned him he had a 3 o'clock appointment on 36th Street. Never mind, he headed uptown, northward. At 54th Street, he crossed Madison and walked west. Came abruptly to a halt and looked upward. There was a sign on the window 3 stories up. He could make it out clearly. A.S. Lefkowitz, Certified Accountant. It had an F and an O.W., but it was the first itch ending he had seen.
The first one. He was getting closer.
He turned north again on Fifth Avenue, hurrying through the unreal streets of an unreal city, panting with the chase of something, while the crowds about him began to fade. A sign in a ground floor window, M.R. Lefkowitz, M.D. A small gold leaf semicircle of letters in a candy store window, Jacob Levko. Half a name, he thought savagely. Why is he disturbing me with half a name?
The streets were empty now, except for the varying clan of Lefkowitz. 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 To stand out in the vacuum.
He was dimly aware of the park ahead, standing out in painted, motionless green. He turned west. A piece of newspaper fluttered at the corner of his eyes. The only movement in a dead world. He veered, stooped, and picked it up without slackening his pace. It was in Yiddish, a torn half-page. He couldn't read it. He couldn't make out the blurred Hebrew letters, and could not have read it if they were clear. But one word was clear. It stood out in dark letters in the center of the page, each letter clear in its every serif, and it said, Lefkowitz. He knew. And as he said it to himself, he placed its accent on the second syllable, Lefkowitz. He let the paper flutter away and entered the empty park. The trees were still and the leaves hung in odd, suspended attitudes. The sunlight was a dead weight upon him and gave no warmth. He was running, but his feet kicked up no dust, and a tuft of grass on which he placed his weight did not bend. And there, on a bench, was an old man, the only man in the desolate park. He wore a dark felt cap with a visor shading his eyes. From underneath it, tufts of gray hair protruded.
His grizzled beard reached the uppermost button of his rough jacket. His old trousers were patched, and a strip of burlap was wrapped about each worn and shapeless shoe. Martin stopped. It was difficult to breathe. He could only say one word, and he used it to ask his question. Levkovich? He stood there, while the old man rose slowly to his feet, brown old eyes peering close.
Martin, he sighed. Samuel Martin, you have come.
The words sounded with an effect of double exposure, for under the English, Martin heard the faint sigh of a foreign tongue. Under the Samuel was the unheard shadow of a Shmuel. The old man's rough, veined hands reached out, then withdrew as though he were afraid to touch.
I have been looking, but there are so many people in this wilderness of a city that is to come. So many Martins and Martines and Mortons and Mertons. I stopped at last when I found greenery, but for a moment only. I would not commit the sin of losing faith. And then you came.
It is I, said Martin, and knew it was. And you are Phineas Levkovich. Why are we here?
I am Phineas ben Jehuda, assigned the name Levkovich by the ukase of the Tsar that ordered family names for all.
And we are here, the old man said softly, because I prayed. When I was already old, Leah, my only daughter, the child of my old age, left for America with her husband, left the knouts of the old for the hope of the new. And my sons died, and Sarah, the wife of my bosom, was long dead, and I was alone. And the time came when I, too, must die. But I had not seen Leah since her leaving for the far country, and word had come but rarely. My soul yearned that I might see sons born unto her, sons of my seed, sons in whom my soul might yet live and not die.
His voice was steady, and the soundless shadow of sound beneath his words was the stately roll of an ancient language.
And I was answered, and 2 hours were given me that I might see the first son of my line to be born in a new land and in a new time. My daughters, 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 son, have I found you, then, amidst the splendor of this city?
But why the search? Why not have brought us together at once?
Because there is pleasure in the hope of the seeking, my son, said the old man radiantly, and in the delight of the finding. I was given 2 hours in which I might seek, 2 hours in which I might find, and behold, thou art here, and I have found that which I had not looked to see in life.
His voice was old, caressing.
Is it well with thee, my son?
It is well, my father, now that I have found thee, said Martin, and dropped to his knees. Give me thy blessing, my father, that it may be well with me all the days of my life, and with the maid whom I am to take to wife, and the little ones yet to be born of my seed and thine. He felt the old hand resting lightly on his head, and there was only the soundless whisper. Martin rose. The old man's eyes gazed into his yearningly. Were they losing focus?
I go to my father's now, in peace, my son, said the old man,
and Martin was alone in the empty park. There was an instant of renewing motion, of the sun taking up its interrupted task, of the wind reviving, and even with that first instant of sensation, all slipped back. At 10 of noon, Sam Martin hitched his way out of the taxicab and found himself groping uselessly for his wallet while traffic inched on. A red truck slowed, then moved on. A white script on its side announced, F. Lukowitz and Sons, Wholesale Clothiers. Martin didn't see it. Yet somehow, he knew that all would be well with him. Somehow, as never before, he knew.